I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, it's kind of a letters to the editor, Tell Me More style. Our Back Talk segment is next. But first, it's time to check in at the barbershop, where the guys talk about whatever's in the news or whatever's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer and blogger Jimmy Israel, TV host and author Keith Boykin, and Ruben Navarrete, a syndicated columnist. I hear they want to talk about the fires in Southern California. I know Ruben's from the San Diego area, so hope he'll tell us whether he's okay. Also, a performer on Senator Barack Obama's upcoming concert series draws criticism from gays and lesbians. And a party just for light-skinned black women? What's that all about? I may jump in, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Hey, hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Great.
Hey, man, doing okay.
All right, well, let's start things off on a serious note. As fires continue to rage in Southern California, over 500,000 acres have been burnt so far. Ruben, you're from San Diego. Give us a view from the ground.
Right. You couldn't get any closer to the fire. I'm right in the middle of it. I was one of the nearly 1 million people who evacuated their homes on Monday. My wife and I took our two little ones, a toddler and an infant, to a modest hotel up in Orange County about 30 miles away from our home. It was almost full. We got our rooms, but they had to turn away like 200 or 300 other people from San Diego. People from San Diego had to go all the way up to Los Angeles to get away from the fire in many cases. And so we just got back into our home on Wednesday. And so it's crazy. I mean, there's smoke and particles still out in the air in San Diego. If you're a young person, a baby, an elderly person, somebody with heart or lung problems, you're not supposed to go outside. It sort of focuses the mind because as a journalist, we're taught to sort of go into the fire. Back when I was young and dumb, you know, a reporter, I'd have taken my laptop and my notepad and ran into the fire, or at least gotten closer to the fire until I was turned away. And not this time. Now I'm a daddy, and the daddy instincts take over. And so I'm grabbing formula and diapers and my laptop and just running, and that's what we did.
Ruben, can I ask a question? I'm sorry, Jimmy was going to say what I was going to say, which is we're really glad that you're fine and everything's fine.
Yeah.
But how do you find out when it's time to leave? What do? Are you just making an individual decision? Or do they come around and like go in the street and say, okay, everybody out now?
It comes in phases. And I'll tell you one thing that really gets your attention in a hurry. You get something called a reverse 911 call. That's where the cops call you instead of you calling the cops. It's an automated call that comes to you, and it came to us at 7 in the morning. And basically, a recording tells you that the city that you live in should be on notice and prepare to evacuate. They say you don't have to evacuate yet, but you might start packing up and thinking about it. Well, girl, that compared to the fact that I just heard it was 10 miles away was all I needed to hear.
Wow.
Okay, I didn't need to stick around for the follow-up call, which came at 3:30, where they tell you then, okay, you better leave. At that point, we were already gone.
Wow.
Keith, I think the government's response to this compares to Katrina.
I don't think there's even a comparison. I mean, you have people in the Superdome in Hurricane Katrina who couldn't get out, and government wasn't there. And this time, I understand the people who were stuck in the stadium there are not really stuck. They're being well-fed and taken care of. They have baby formula and activities, and the president's responded. It's like night and day. And I don't think it's just because of race, quite frankly. I think it's also about resources and money and preparation, so many other things.
Ruben, do you mind? Can I ask you the same question?
Yeah.
Do you think that in part things were smoother in San Diego because of Katrina, or do you think it's race plays a part of it? Or do you think that the – because, you know, San Diego's had their problems with governance in the past.
Yeah.
Do you think it's just – what do you think?
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, I don't think it was about race at all, but I think that there are differences. I think that you benefit from the experience of having gone through 9/11 and Katrina. And some news just recently, we've met here with Michael Chertoff, the Homeland Security chief. And, you know, you got to know about Chertoff. Every time somebody mentions Katrina, he gets like a nervous itch because let the record show that that almost cost him his job. He went out of his way to tell us here at the editorial board in San Diego about differences he saw between the two crises, about sort of having hindsight and having the experience of Katrina to fall back on. And I'll just end with this. I think there are people in Louisiana who resent the comparison. They think that what they faced was much more significant than what we faced. And then there are people in San Diego who likewise resent the comparison and think that they did a lot better under pressure than the folks back there did.
Mm. Yeah, it's kind of a no-win situation, I think, for the Bush administration, because if they do a good job here, then people wonder, well, why didn't they do a good job before? And they don't take into account the fact they might have learned something from the whole experience before.
Ah, my man, thank you so much for checking in, and we're so happy to know that you and your family's doing well. Now, Barack Obama is catching heat from the gay community for including Donnie McClurkin, Reverend Donnie McClurkin, in his gospel outreach program. Keith, for those of us who don't know much about McClurkin, can you explain what's at the heart of the outrage?
Well, Donnie McClurkin is what's called an ex-gay. He used to be gay, said he was molested by a relative as a child. He converted, I suppose, is the term, a few years ago. Now he preaches against homosexuality. He says that gays can be delivered from their lifestyle, as he puts it. And it's caused quite a bit of controversy in the gay and lesbian community about him for some time, particularly in the Black gay and lesbian community. When the decision was made by the Obama campaign to include McClurkin in this gospel concert Embrace the Change tour that's taking place this weekend in South Carolina, a lot of gays and lesbians were understandably surprised about the decision, because it was linking Obama, who's pretty much gay-friendly, with McClurkin, who is not.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're making our weekly visit to the barbershop with Jimmy Israel, Keith Boykin, and Ruben Navarrete. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thank you for that, Michelle. Ruben, Obama's a member of the United Church of Christ. That's one of probably the most liberal, open, and affirming churches in the world, probably. And just for due diligence, I used to work for the United Church of Christ as a staff writer. Was this a political misstep or just kind of a faux pas?
Misstep. And, you know, it's fair game, I think, when Republicans cozy up to leaders who may be homophobic or whatever, and then they just want sort of the votes that go along with those folks, and Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and others. And it's fair game also that in 1984, when Jesse Jackson ran a historic campaign for president, he was questioned about his relationship with Louis Farrakhan. And there should be somebody on staff when you run a presidential campaign whose sole job it is to check out the background of anybody who you are going to appear on stage with.
Keith, I'm not trying to turn you into the gay Al Sharpton, but I'm going to ask you a really broad question.
You always use that term.
What does the gay community want from the next president of the United States?
I think they want somebody who is going to lead the fight on the employment non-discrimination bill, be supportive of gays in the military. I don't think that they're expecting a president who's going to support them on marriage, because I think that most of the leading presidential candidates in the Democratic Party aren't there yet. And so I think they want somebody who's going to move the ball forward a little bit, but definitely not move the ball backward.
Let's switch gears for a moment and kind of get to news of the strange about this club promoter in Detroit who recently tried to host a light-skinned party where only light-skinned women were allowed versus dark-skinned women.
No, and I don't think that's quite right, Jimmy. I think that what happened is that light-skinned women, and I'm still trying to figure out how he was going to define that, okay, but they got in free.
Right.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean,
you know. I didn't know that. Wow.
They also had to be Libras. They had to be Libras.
Yeah, they had to be, light-skinned Libras. But he canceled it amidst a lot of national outrage.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
Keith, where have we heard that before in this
people
century?
People have all these biases and prejudices. It goes back to slavery, the light versus dark distinctions. This is just an example where the people there who organized it just got carried away. But it's mm-hmm. a reflection of so many things that are going on in the larger society. It's sad, but it's true.
Sure. Ruben, I know in South America, they have kind of a skin tone caste system.
Oh, yeah, you bet.
What's up? I mean, enlighten us a little bit about that.
It's sort of the same thing. I mean, in Latin America and Mexico, it's no surprise that most of the folks who run Mexico are light-skinned. If you were going to look for a dark-skinned president in Mexico, you have to go back to Benito Juarez, 150 years ago. But I don't get this because we all know some very beautiful people, men and women, who have dark skin. What do you do with people like Iman and other models who are just gorgeous, who may have darker skin?
Well, filmmaker
Spike Lee actually touched on this in his film School Days. I believe that was 1988. We got that clip we can drop right about now, Michelle.
You really want to play it? You want to hear it?
I really want to play it.
Okay, go ahead. Here it is.
Bust it.
It ain't even real. You wish you had hair like this.
Girl, you know you weren't even born with blue eyes.
That's right. Blue contact lenses.
They're just jealous.
Right. Jealous.
Rachel, I've been watching you look at Julian. You're not slick.
If that was true, he wasn't much to look at.
Tell me, Rachel.
Pickaninny.
Barbie doll.
High yellow heifer.
Tar baby.
Wanna be white, jigaboo?
Don't start.
We're gonna finish it.
Wow. Thank you for that, Michelle. That was the beautiful Miss Tisha Campbell and all in her cinematic brilliance. Thank you.
And the musical number comes after that too.
Right, right.
But you know, it's funny. I'm listening to that, and I remember thinking it was funny at the time, but I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm older. It's not funny. It's painful. I can't believe we're still having this conversation.
It is kind of a plantation conversation. Keith, are we ever going to be past this?
We were having a conversation when I was in college 20 years ago, and we're still having it now because we haven't done anything to change it. The society hasn't really dramatically changed. The images that we put out there in our culture haven't changed. There hasn't been a dialogue about it in our society, in our community, so why would it have changed?
Well, listen, this is one of the things that community does to itself. You know, there's so many things that I could get on a soapbox and say, well, you know, Hispanics are being hurt by the other, by external forces in the following ways. But there are cases where Hispanics hurt themselves. And likewise here, when you first start having kids, if you have somebody who shows favoritism in a household toward a lighter-skinned baby as opposed to a darker-skinned baby, that's sort of how it starts, and certainly that's how it starts in the Latino community.
You know what? Can I push back on this, Ruben? Because I think it's both and. I mean, the society offers like a feedback loop here. If you look on, you know, Univision or Telemundo, not to be, you know, picking on them, and who are the anchors? You know, who are the who are the talent, and what are their features? And if you pick up a women's magazine, and who is the held up as the object of beauty? So I guess it's hard for me to sort of say that it's just this is just within the community when the culture basically tells you constantly what it is that you're supposed to aspire to. And what if you don't fit that?
You're right. It's more like to see light-skinned African-Americans than dark-skinned.
But can I ask you, though, as guys, though, this is one of the things that fascinates because women talk about this a lot. I know women of color talk about this a lot. Do you guys feel, as men of color, that this is something that you are held to, their standards of appearance that you think affect your life?
I mean, me personally, I remember like all the 80s. I was totally out of the picture because I didn't look like El DeBarge. I wasn't light skinned with curly hair. I was totally out of the loop. I mean, sisters would diss me as nappy head and doo doo brown. So you know, it's now it's different. You know, now you know I got the long locks and it's all different. But in the 80s was a dark period in my social life. No pun intended.
Well, I had a Jerry Curl in the '80s.
That's on you, Keith. That's on you. Okay, that's definitely you can't blame that on anybody.
No, that's my fault. You know, but
what about you, Ruben?
You know, Latinos spend a lot of time going at each other, criticizing each other.
Well, we do too, as blacks.
Yeah, you know, and you know, my gay friends say that. My Jewish friends say that. Everybody has that same sort of dynamic at work in their community.
I hear you, bro. Well, with that, we're going to have to call it a wrap. Gentlemen, thanks so much for coming in. And speaking of objects of beauty, I got to pass on to the lady of the house.
Oh, yes.
My boss.
Oh, yes.
Michelle Martin.
Yes, keep it coming. Right. Keep it
smoking,
coming.
Smoking.
Jimmy Israel is a freelance writer and reporter. He joined us from WFSU in Tallahassee. Ruben Navarrete writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. He joined us from his office in San Diego, and we are so glad you and your family are safe. Keith Boykin is the host of BET's My Two Cents and is an author. He joined us from our bureau in New York. You can find links to all of our barbershop guests at our website, npr.org/tellmemore. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Yep.